The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to a Science Weekly Extra with me, Ian Sample. This week came the historic and momentous announcement that the teams at CERN in Switzerland had reached a critical and conclusive point in decoding the massive evidence collected by the Large Hadron Collider. The evidence is that yes, there is a new and fundamental particle there, and this new particle is strongly suspected to be the long-sought Higgs boson. I was in Switzerland to witness the announcements and to see the teams reveal their results. On this special show, I'll be talking to the Director General of CERN, Rolf Hoyer, about what this means for particle physics and CERN. And as luck would have it, I bumped into Lynn Evans, who in large part built the Large Hadron Collider and is one of the thousands of scientists who worked on the LHC and deserve the world's gratitude for their superb work over the last three decades and more. To give some context to the announcement, we have a discussion on the search for the Higgs boson that myself and Alok Jha recorded last year with the British physicist and Guardian blogger John Butterworth, who is part of the Atlas team at CERN. But first, I caught up with the man at the helm of this great announcement.
Well, my name is Rolf Hoyer and I'm the Director General of CERN.
I hear you've discovered something.
Not me. You said you are informal. Yeah? Not me. No. Yes, the experiments at the Large Hadron Collider discovered something, and this something is a new type of particle. It's a fundamental boson, which we didn't. It's the heaviest of the fundamental bosons. It is most probably a Higgs particle, maybe the Higgs particle of the Standard Model. But for this, we have to investigate a little bit more its properties. We have to really pin down: does it really have all the properties we expect from it? And we assume it's a scalar, so we have to measure this property of its spin, that it doesn't have a spin. And if it doesn't have a spin, then I would say it is a Standard Model Higgs boson. But that will take time, and we have to wait a bit more. But today we have achieved a huge milestone, I must say.
Where we are today, what would you bet on this being a kind of Higgs particle? You can choose from the change in your pocket, your car, or your house.
Well, you see, I'm a Swabian, and the Swabian are, the Scottish of Germany. And the Swabian only bets when he is pretty sure that he wins, okay? So the maximum I would take would only be the change in my pocket, which is pretty small. But I think I would bet, well, I'm pretty confident that it's a Higgs boson.
Sounds like you bet my house.
It depends how your house looks like.
More seriously, what lies ahead in terms of the work for this particle and very briefly for the LHC?
Well, first of all, this year we want to pin down a little bit more the properties of this particle. I don't know how far we really get until the end of the year, but 2013 and 14, we have to shut down the machine. We have to refurbish the machine. We have to improve some connections. We want to go to the highest possible energy this machine can deliver. And that opens a completely new window then for new physics with nearly double the energy, nearly twice the energy. That opens a completely new window for new physics. So, because there must be something beyond the Standard Model. And the properties of the Higgs boson could tell us also maybe some indication of the new physics. If the properties deviate from the Standard Model expectation, then you have new physics.
This kind of news you're announcing from CERN is going to be the kind of thing that it gets enormous attention. We can see that already. How important is that to you or to science, do you think, that maybe the up-and-coming bright kids out there, you know, get excited by this kind of thing?
Absolutely, and that's exactly what I hope comes through such events. You see, kids are a priori interested also in science, but they very quickly get distracted. Yeah? But if you can keep their attention, and you keep their attention through flagship projects, and through flagship projects which can show some success, yeah? And this is exactly the type of events I hope gets young kids into science, and who will then bring science further and further. And frankly speaking, we need scientists, we need engineers. One should not forget the engineering aspect. We need these kids being captured. Eh? And I can tell you, I gave recently a talk, a public talk at the Royal Society in London. And afterwards, a kid, I don't know which age, a pretty small guy, came to me, looked at me, and I said, "Do you have a question?" He said, "No, I just want to shake your hands." So these guys are Yeah, they are captured by this. And another one wants to do physics. So, fine. Fantastic.
Just congratulations. It's been a just amazing thing to watch today.
Okay, yeah. I found it awesome. I found it amazing too. Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm Lynn Evans. I was the LHC project leader for 16 years.
Lynn, you essentially built the LHC.
Together with a number of colleagues, of course, but it took first of all, I designed it and built it and then commissioned it. As you will remember, in 2008, we had a little bit of a problem, but now everything's fine.
Watching the presentations from the scientists Fabiola Gianotti and Joe Incandela to the rest of the auditorium today, we're speaking on the day that the results were announced, there's a lot of emotion in that room. As one of the really key figures behind the machine, the engineering side of this, how was this day for you?
Well, it was completely unexpected for a start. I expected the data from both experiments to be fairly strong but inconclusive, but it's not turned out like that. I mean, we've really nailed it. And I think if you saw the transmission from the auditorium, you would appreciate the incredible atmosphere that was there.
These moments don't come along very often in physics today. I mean, what is this like, you think, for the community? What happens now?
No, they don't come very often. I am very fortunate, actually, that I've been involved. I was involved in the discovery of the W and Z. So I don't think there are many people that can have two such events during their career. For the community, I think this is, an enormous step forward. Now we do understand what the origin of mass is in our universe. Now let's go on from that. I think we've got to see if the Higgs is a standard model Higgs or something more exotic, and then let's go on and look for dark matter, dark energy, the other big questions that are waiting for us to try to answer.
It's hard sometimes for us to get across the engineering aspects of what's behind the LHC, the machine itself, because there's so much focus on the science. Apart from sort of trivial things or glib things, maybe like the size of the LHC and the fact that the protons move at the speed of light, but can you give me an idea of just the complexity, the enormity of that project? Because it is, when you look at the sort of designs for this thing, you wonder how that is even conceivable, let alone buildable.
Yeah, if I step back and look at what we've done, it's hard for me to believe. This machine has been pushed technologically to its limits. It's cooled with a superfluid helium, which is a quantum fluid, 100 tons of it. It's been an absolutely immense job of construction. It's taken 16 years from conception to actual construction. So it's a modern cathedral building, if you like.
And now now this result is out. What are you going to be keeping an eye on this through the shutdown and through till 2015 onwards, I suppose?
Well, personally, I'm now moving on. I've got a new job, looking at a possible successor to the LHC, a linear collider, and I take on that job for the next 3 years. As a study, the Higgs, the discovery of the Higgs is a big boost to a possible machine, which probably will not be built here at CERN. But that's what I'll be spending most of my time on. But of course, the LHC is my baby, and I'm not going to neglect it.
Any partying tonight?
I'm on a plane to Sydney tonight, so I think I've got a 13-hour flight followed by an 8-hour flight in front of me. So I don't think there'll be any time for partying.
Lynn, thanks so much.
Okay, all the best.
We wish Lynn well on his journey, and with that in mind, we decided to return to a discussion around the work at CERN that we did last year with Professor John Butterworth, who is part of the ATLAS team at CERN. Myself and Alok Jar quizzed John about the nature of the search for this particle called the Higgs boson.
The Higgs boson, for anyone who may not be familiar, is the quantum of the Higgs field. This is something that permeates the universe and gives the particles that we're all made of, the protons, the electrons, the neutrons, their mass. It also explains why, for example, the photon has no mass, and some very similar particles called the W and Z bosons do have mass. Photons carry the electromagnetic force around the universe at the speed of light. W and Z bosons carry something called the weak nuclear force, which only exists inside the nucleus of atoms and is partly responsible for things like radioactivity. At some point in the history of the universe, electromagnetism and the weak nuclear force were indistinguishable, the so-called electroweak force. But as the universe cooled, the Higgs boson started to flex its muscles. One of its effects was to snap the electroweak force into two. It coupled with the W and Z bosons, giving them mass and making them sluggish. But it left photons alone, free to roam at light speed. At least, that's the theory. To prove it correct, scientists at the LHC have to find the Higgs boson, and they hunt for it in the way they hunt for all the building blocks of our universe, by tearing bigger particles apart. The LHC zooms protons around its 27-kilometer accelerator, smashing them apart inside its detectors that are placed around the ring. The detectors, ATLAS and CMS, scan for the signatures of different fundamental particles in the debris. The Higgs boson has an individual signature predicted by theoretical physicists. What they don't know, however, is the particle's own mass. The mass of the Higgs boson has to be measured by experiment, and LHC scientists have been watching the spray of debris after each collision, carefully ruling out certain masses and narrowing down the possible range. A bit like scanning across the FM dial on a radio, they're looking for the signal for their very own radio station. So how close are the teams to finding Higgs boson FM?
We've covered getting on for 80% of that mass range that it could have been in. But the trick is that the place where most people would have said it would be, where all the indirect limits say it probably will be, is in the low end of that, near to 114. And that's really the hardest place to look. So the real thing to watch out for on Wednesday will be how far have we squeezed that range down? And as we squeeze it down, do we start to see anything popping up that might be a candidate? And as Ian said, it's not going to be definitive, but it will shift the balance of probabilities. And that's interesting. You know, this is how a discovery will eventually emerge, or else we'll rule it out and have to think of something better.
Does the fact that it's at the lower end of that energy scale make it simpler to find in terms of the fact that the LHC will get to those energies? Or you said it was more complicated.
It's harder. It's paradoxically. The reason for that is because the Higgs, the way that Higgs will show up depends critically on its mass. So we have plenty of energy to create it at the LHC over that whole range. But if it's above twice the mass of, say, the W boson, then it will decay to Ws. It always decays to whatever it can decay to, what the heaviest thing that it can possibly decay to.
Now, there are other possibilities, depending on how heavy the Higgs boson turns out to be. If it's not heavy enough to decay into two W particles, it might instead decay into two Z bosons. This would be very easy to spot, since the Zs would quickly decay into four leptons, a telltale signature at the LHC. If the Higgs is even less heavy than that, though, it gets really difficult to spot, because this means the boson would decay into the heaviest type of quark, the bottom or B quark.
As it gets lower, it can no longer decay to Ws and Zs, and what it decays to then dominantly is a B quark, and you get jets made of B quarks, get sprays of hadrons coming out, and the problem is the LHC has just is full of sprays of hadrons, so it's almost an impossible signal to find. So it takes a lot, although we'd be making a lot more Higgses than if it's low mass. It's a lot harder to find them. It's a needle in a haystack that's a lot smaller, and the haystack's a lot bigger in that case than it would be if it was heavier.
John, if the LHC or Tevatron come out at some point and say they have found a particle, how do you know whether it's the Higgs or something else? I mean, how do you know that, you know, the Higgs has different properties to other particles? How do you know, just from the fact that it decays into this, that and the other at different masses, how do you know that is actually then responsible for doing what the, you know, kind of what the Higgs field does, if you like? For
the key element in that, well, first of all, it must have no charge and it must have spin zero and things, but those kind of things you can probably pin down at some point. But the key thing is what I was saying, it couples to mass. That's what it's for. It gives things mass. And the what we mean by coupling is it's the if you imagine it, you've made a Higgs and it's got an option to decay to a whole bunch of things. The coupling just tells it which, if the coupling's strong, it will decay to this. If it's weaker, it will decay to the other thing, something else less often. And it's measuring whether that coupling is what the standard model says it should be, which is basically going with the mass of the thing. And that's what I was saying, that you need to see this in several different channels. With a with
and with the frequencies you'd expect from
exactly the proportionate rates and everything. Exactly.
So that kind of becomes the fingerprint for the particle.
That's right.
You decide it beforehand. That's how it should look. And if it looks like that, then almost by definition.
I mean, in a way, you know, it's in science, it's very, very hard to prove a positive, right? So you'd always have some questions. There are other things you can do. I mean, there are some processes at the LHC right at the very high energy tail that probably will be more common when we go to full energy in a couple of years. That actually, without the standard model Higgs, the answer is infinity, which is clearly nonsense. But that's where the Higgs really comes in and regularizes the standard model. So you'd also want to measure that in the end and check that it was really doing that, that you're really seeing the Higgs field, not just the Higgs boson then. So there's a lot of stuff you would do and to close up, to kind of build confidence this really was A, some kind of Higgs boson, and B, maybe the standard model Higgs boson. It's, in a way, it's a lot easier to prove a theory wrong than right, right? You never prove a theory wrong. A theory is always provisionally correct until you find another bit of data that says that things were travelling too fast or there's no Higgs or something.
Let's not talk about things travelling too fast. Okay. That's not what this is about. This is the neutrino-free zone. Oh, bollocks. Sorry about the language there. It's just that those pesky faster-than-light neutrinos that have come out of a separate experiment at CERN have been causing all sorts of problems recently, and we really do have enough to contend with right here. In particular, trying to understand the standard model of particle physics and how the Higgs boson fits into it. So let's just step back a bit, actually. This is probably the wrong way around slightly, but it might be worth quickly describing what the standard model Higgs field is meant to do and why it's so important to find something that does its job for the standard model, which is the sort of set of equations in particle physics that describe all the particles and the interactions between them. So give us your 1 minute on the Higgs field.
It's to do with symmetries. So it's to do with the fact that the theories, of quantum field theories that we have that describe these things, all rely on the presence of symmetries. And there's Tufte and Veltman won the Nobel Prize for proving that that's intimately tied to the fact that you can make any predictions with them at all. They're called gauge theories. The trouble is those symmetries actually, if you take them naively, forbid any particle from having any mass. Any mass breaks the symmetry. So what the Higgs mechanism does is, or the Higgs boson is the sign of the Higgs mechanism happening, is that it kind of allows the theory to have the symmetry overall, but in the low energy state that we live in every day, the symmetry is not there. So it's a thing we call spontaneously broken symmetry, and it's a mathematical trick in one way, but it's a very beautiful thing, and we do see cases that spontaneous broken symmetry does happen in things like ferromagnets. So it's a natural phenomenon that happens in other places. And the postulate here is that it actually is an intimate part of the why the universe looks the way it is.
Symmetry, as you've heard there, is an important component of the modern quantum mechanical toolbox. It's required for the theories to work, but it also means that the particles we see, quarks, electrons and the rest, shouldn't have any mass. Clearly, though, they do have mass, and therefore the symmetry seems to be broken. You need the Higgs mechanism and the boson that goes with it to explain this conundrum, to give the particles mass and to allow the symmetry to remain blissfully unbroken. But before you go around thinking that the Higgs explains all mass, well, it doesn't. Ian, you wrote in a blog post, what's 2% of you, say?
Something like that, yeah.
Of course, then you've got dark matter. Which
Hold it there. Dark matter. Now, regular Science Weekly listeners will already be up to speed on this mysterious substance.
The most important property of dark matter is that it is not ordinary matter. So we've known for a long time that whatever it is not made of ordinary atoms.
In September, Professor Carlos Frank there of Durham University took Science Weekly on a tour of what he thinks dark matter might be. It's still online, so do go and have a listen. But for now, let's not get distracted by cosmological things. Back to the Higgs. But the Higgs mechanism, this thing we're all excited about, and the possible Higgs boson, if that does exist, explains about 2% of, let's say, baryonic matter, the mass of baryonic matter. And the rest is the binding energy between gluons, but that's another different conversation.
Well, I think it's true to say that if the quarks had absolutely zero mass, the proton wouldn't stick together. So indirectly, the whole thing relies on the Higgs, even that bit. But nevertheless.
And you've described a bit about during the collisions, you collide protons in the LHC and these things smash apart. And there are all sorts of signatures of different particles that fly out of those things which you detect in ATLAS. And from the directions and the curls and all sorts of the speeds of those things, you can detect mass and you can tell what particle is what. And the Higgs boson, as you've said, would have a specific pattern. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you statistically know that you found a particular particle in the mechanism? We hear about something called the sigma. What is that?
It's a kind of indirect, it's a signifier of the probability of something just happening by random chance. So you could sit in one level, right, with the LHC, we're having these billions of collisions and we're doing the same experiment over and over and over again, right? And in quantum mechanics, when you do the same thing, you don't get always the same result. You get, it's like rolling a dice. So we're rolling the same dice over and over again, if you like. And if you ask yourself, is this a fair dice? And you roll it and you'd expect each number to come up a sixth of the time. But if you started noticing, say, six was coming up more often, you might think you got a signal for the dice being biased. So if you think of the Higgs as being a bias in the dice, and we have a distribution that should be completely flat if the dice was fair, but you see one face of the dice coming up a bit more often than you
expect.
That
means there's a signal.
Then there might be a signal there, but you have to ask yourself, what's the chances of that just being random, that it's a fair dice, but that's just a random fluctuation. So the sigma is to do with how often a random fluctuation will give you that false signal, that signal falsely. So we say three sigma, it's about 1% chance of you getting that. If the dice was fair, how often would you get that signal, right? And if it's three sigma, it's about 1%. We tend to go for five sigma as the kind of gold plated, but it's all a bit arbitrary. It's really a level of probability. You know, it's a sliding scale. You build your confidence when you want. But the other complication in all that is that it's not just statistics, right? There are things called systematic errors in any experiment, and they're a lot harder to evaluate. So you that's, for instance, how well do you actually systematically measure the energy of whatever it is you're seeing? If you're getting it wrong the same way every time, that's no longer a random error, and you have to try and account for those kind of errors as well. So then the whole language of sigmas becomes a little bit flaky because you don't really know that everything's got this kind of beautiful statistical distribution.
So something might be a five sigma result by the statistics alone, but actually there's an error that you've not spotted in the equipment.
Precisely, and that every roll of your dice has the same error, so the more times you roll the dice doesn't help you because you're making the same error every time. So that's a kind of systematic error. And we know about those things. We try and control them. You can control a lot of them from the data, from other bits of data, but still it's a very tricky game, and people tend to be rather conservative, especially with a relatively new experiment.
If you guys find something that explains why these fundamental particles have mass, whether it's the Higgs field or something else, does that automatically tell you why different particles weigh what they do?
No. It allows them to have mass, but it doesn't predict the masses. The exception is the W and the Z bosons. It's very intimately tied into that. So this thing called electroweak symmetry breaking, which is why the W and the Z have mass and the photon doesn't. That's very intimately tied to the Higgs with very few free parameters. But the masses of things like the electron and the quarks and that, no, they're it allows them to have it, but it doesn't actually predict what they are. So there's still, it will be a major advance in our understanding, but it's not like a theory of everything. It doesn't suddenly solve all our open questions.
So how do you go on to work that out? So presumably at some point you have to nail down, why is it that the top quark weighs so much and electron weighs not very much?
We'd like to know if there's... I mean, there are patterns like that. It's like, you know, with the patterns you see in the periodic table are kind of were due to the fact that the atoms are made of a number of protons and neutrons and electrons, and that was a hint of an underlying structure. It's very tempting to speculate that the pattern we see in fundamental particles is also a hint at some underlying order. Maybe they're made of something even smaller, or maybe there's some other symmetries in the theory that dictate what these things would be. Because there's no guarantee that that's the case, right? I mean, we shouldn't get too carried away with our reductionism of nature and trying to make everything in one equation. On the other hand, this has been a very fruitful line of reasoning and inquiry to pursue, and we've just got to be a little humble about it and not expect that there will be an ultimate answer. But on the other hand, looking for the ultimate answer is an extremely entertaining and productive thing to do.
John, you hinted there about the ultimate answer. I mean, if you narrow down the range for the Higgs boson, if it exists, and you carry on doing that, and then you find actually that perhaps there isn't one, or that you can't find it, at what point do you start entertaining other possibilities? I mean, people are already discussing this, and the Nobel Prize winner, mm-hmm. Steven Weinberg, has even said publicly that if you do find the Higgs, it'd be quite boring, actually, that you really, really don't want to find it.
Well, I mean, I've sat through so many talks where the conclusion of some beautiful measurement is, and this is all consistent with the standard model. The tragedy is, if we find the Higgs boson, then that will be the punchline of that one too. And it would be nice to have a punchline that said, okay, this isn't, the standard model's wrong, actually. Part of me sympathises strongly with that. And on the other hand, it's much nicer to find something than nothing.
Now, no matter what scientists at CERN announce next, it probably isn't going to be a gateway to another dimension. It didn't stop Ian Sample from asking, though. And as you'll see, it's not quite as random a question as you might think.
John, doesn't the extra dimensions idea feed into this whole idea of LHC producing black holes in some level?
Yeah, I mean, the way that we might have, and I guess still might be, produced black holes is that there are extra dimensions, and in those, some models, gravity knows about all the extra dimensions, but the other forces don't. What happens is you get to a certain energy scale where you can suddenly start to see the extra dimensions, then gravity gets as strong as the other forces because they're all going through these extra dimensions then. And it's at that stage then that you can start you have enough energy then to create black holes. If there's no extra dimensions, there just isn't enough energy at the LHC to do it. But if you had that kind of scenario where gravity becomes strong, and this is what I was saying, the Planck scale is effectively then the same as the electroweak symmetry breaking scale, and then you can make black holes, but they also decay very, very quickly by the same mechanism. But we've been looking for them and we haven't seen any yet, so it's becoming a little less plausible.
You tend to think of black holes as things that would be quite easy to spot, like sort of like right at the middle of a galaxy with loads of stuff falling into it, and the sort of black holes that you know theoretically are on, you know, might be on the cards of the LHC. We're talking about something very different.
They're very, very tiny, and in these models, well, what we know is that if it's possible to create black holes by those energies, they certainly don't grow and suck stuff in, because they would be being created all over the place in natural phenomena as well. Right? But what would happen if these theories are correct is that they're created and they decay almost instantaneously, but they don't really look like any other particle that we're familiar with. So the signature is a whole bunch of mess. Yeah. Which is, you know, we've made a lot of mess, but none of it looks like a black hole yet.
Just to wind up, I suppose, John, it'd be really worth talking about some of these other sort of at the extreme theoretical ideas like supersymmetry, technicolor, these sorts of ideas that actually there are lots of other things that the LHC could find evidence of in the next few years. So let's talk a bit about the future beyond this boson question. What other things are you going to be looking for? Supersymmetry, for example. Tell us what that is and how you're going to find it if it's there.
Right. So, well, supersymmetry I mentioned earlier that our theories of nature are intimately tied together with supersymmetry, with symmetries in general, sorry. Supersymmetry is kind of the last missing symmetry. It's mathematically speaking very special in that it's the only one left that nature hasn't used, so it seems plausible to suspect it might use it somewhere. String theorists tell you supersymmetry is essential, but they don't tell you it has to be LHC energies, it could just be anywhere. But what it does is it introduces a symmetry between actually the force-carrying particles and the particles themselves. So it's all the electron and the quark and things that, and the neutrinos, they all have spin half, they're all fermions. And all the forces, all the particles that carry forces between them, like the photon that carries electromagnetism or the gluon that carries the strong forces we mentioned earlier, they're all bosons, they all have spin one, and their Higgs is the only thing with spin zero.
Why is that not got a spin one then if it's a boson? Is that a terrible question to
No,
ask?
Not at all. No, boson, it's the key thing is whether it's an integer or a half integer. So anything with a half integer spin is a fermion, and anything with an integer spin being okay. 0, 1 or 2.
Silly question out of the way. Off you
the
go.
Gravitons would be bosons too, and they would have spin 2 if they exist. This supersymmetry introduces a symmetry between the force carriers. It's finally the completion of the symmetry cycle, you know, between the force carriers and the things they carry the forces between. So there'd be a neutrino, which is a neutrino but with spin one, for instance. And there'd be a photino, which is a photon but with spin half.
So the photon, which is a boson, would have a fermion partner,
exactly.
Which is the photino, which is something that you might be able to find if supersymmetry exists.
That's right.
And so you're doubling the number of particles out there,
yeah,
essentially.
And increasing the parameters in the standard model and stuff a lot. But it does have some neat... I mean, one of the really puzzling things is, right, and this is, to me, this isn't why the LHC is as exciting as it is, really, right, is that we know that there's a unification of forces at the electroweak scale, which is the mass, roughly the mass of the Higgs, or if it's there, or the W or the Z. There's this kind of scale in nature, this mass scale in nature, and it's got units, you know. Why does nature pick this scale? Naturally speaking, there's no scales between zero and the Planck mass, right? And, well, the only other one we know is actually the proton mass, a strong force generates a scale. But anyway, we know
the Planck mass is the smallest
super
possible.
High, 10 to the 19, oh, some number
highest
of
possible.
It's where quantum gravity and everything has to come in. It's the true event horizon of our knowledge at some level. But it's a long way away from where we can study experimentally at the moment. But we know that within reach of the LHC, there is this unification scale where the electromagnetic force and the weak force actually come together. And that's not speculation. We've measured that. We've seen that these forces do come together at that point. And that's where the mass of the particles is generated. And above that, these particles are effectively massless. So that's why this is where the Higgs has to be, if it's there, because it's intimately tied in with that symmetry breaking. And so I think, to me, we're looking at physics in a qualitatively new regime. And I'd really just want to look at it. And it's, all bets are kind of off up there, right? We've got our theoretical armoury to take us to the electroweak symmetry breaking scale. And it's the Higgs, as everyone was saying, that it's very hard to find a plausible alternative for it, but there are some candidates.
Other ideas, yeah.
But there's no reason to think physics looks just like that above this scale. It's really an event horizon. It's really a special energy scale that we're looking above for the first time.
And is it even possible to get up there for those sorts of energy scales in the collisions?
Yeah, for sure. No, that's why we built the thing. That's why we went to all this effort. 27 kilometres of superconducting magnets get you there. But it takes a while to accumulate the statistics to really scope the whole thing out. And of course, we've been looking like crazy for things like supersymmetry and black holes.
What would be the evidence of that? I was going to say, how would you know you've found a supersymmetric particle?
In a lot of... trouble with SUSY is supersymmetry is that it's got a lot of variance. It has a lot of free parameters. But a very generic property of a lot of these variants is that the supersymmetric particles have to be created in pairs, and then once you've created them, they carry with them a quantum number, so they can't decay. The lightest one can't decay to anything, and what that is, that's one of the reasons supersymmetry. Another reason supersymmetry is attractive, and that could be dark matter. That could be that lightest supersymmetric particle could be the dark matter in the universe that we have evidence for from galaxy rotation curves and things as well. But we don't know what it is. Well, that's a very natural candidate coming from particle physics. But the way we see those in our detectors is actually we don't see them. so they don't interact at all. So you end up with an imbalance in your detector, missing energy or something, and you can... Missing energy happens when neutrinos are created in the detector as well, and that does happen, but we can predict how often that happens. And if we see it happening more often than we expect, or in particularly unusual events, that could be a very convincing signal for supersymmetry. As I say, of course, we've been looking for all these things as well as looking for the Higgs boson. So far, we haven't seen anything. But
And what stage would you start to get to the top energies for the LHC? You've not been colliding at full energy yet.
No, that's right.
So what's the sort of plan for that?
So we'll run through this year. We may get we hope we'll get a small increase in energy next year.
2012?
Yeah, in 2012. And then we'll run all the way through 2012, get a lot of data, we hope. This is the plan. And then we'll shut down probably for something like 18 months, and that's when the whole machine will be upgraded so that it can go. The kind of, you remember in 2008 there was an accident and it failed when it tried to go up to high energy. And it's known why that happened now, but there's some work needs to be done to prepare it to do that. So it will there'll be a long shutdown. We'll also upgrade some of the detectors, make them able to cope with more data, and then hopefully come back in kind of early 2014. At something close to twice the energy we have now.
So that will be the maximum capacity, so 14 tera-electron volts
right.
At that point in 2014-15.
Yeah.
And then you have a couple more years of data collecting,
at
suppose,
least a
before,
couple, I would say that, yeah.
Before
yeah.
anything comes out of that.
With going up in energy, you saw this time, you get some results out very quickly, but then to scope out the full energy range takes a while. You have to look at the data. It's like you get a very quick look at a whole bunch of new terrain, and if there's anything obvious there, it will come up pretty quickly. But usually there isn't, and you have to go and do a more careful job analysing the data.
What is the what's the mood like at CERN at the moment? I mean, everyone's sort of watching you, or pretty much with whatever announcement you make, and speculating and doing podcasts and blogs and things about things, and trying to get you to reveal the existence of a boson that may or may not exist, and maybe isn't that important in the whole scheme of things. Is it an exciting place to be, or are you just a bit annoyed by the overawing attention?
It's completely frenetic. There are a lot of people not getting enough sleep, and that's just par for the course in science at a key bit of an experiment. That's true whether you're looking for the Higgs boson or you're trying to get your protein crystallography done on your beamline in diamond or something. People just don't sleep enough and sometimes don't wash enough as well. but actually, the way people react to the great public interest and media interest in this is interesting. It depends a lot on their personalities. There are some scientists who really just think this is a disaster. We should have kept it all quiet and revealed the result 10 years down the line. And all the politicians are going to hate us because they won't understand the result, or we won't find it and they'll think it's a failure. And there's a lot of paranoia about that with some people. Other people, of which I would say I'm one, is think that it's a golden opportunity to explain to people kind of how science is done and what scientists mean when they talk about a balance of probabilities and experimental error and you know, wait and see until we publish it because this is only a rumor, and it turns out yes, it was only a rumor, and those kind of things. It's good, and also not just even how science works in the purest sense, but the fact that there are a lot of people with huge egos and access to grind and things who will tell you different stories, and that's the way it is. But nevertheless, an objective discovery or not of the Higgs will emerge from this chaos, and this shows you how science is, even under all this pressure, science is just the best way we have of not fooling ourselves. And there's plenty of people at CERN who are fooling themselves, but in the end the data will tell us the answer, and though we may deny it for a while, in the end people will have to face it to whatever it is the data tells us.
And that's all we have on this Science Weekly Extra. Remember, for our growing body of video, audio and text on the search for the Higgs boson, just go to guardian.co.uk/science. But from me, Ian Sample, and Science Weekly producer Jason Phipps, thanks for listening.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.